data lakes, data warehousing, ETL, data governance, BI, AI. No. Do not go to another podcast. What if you could listen to a data science expert who speaks our language? I'm Mark Gandy. This is CFO Bookshelf. John Daniels of Bamboo HR is our guest, and that interview is coming up next. John Daniels is a data science and analytics expert. He's our guest. He did a presentation a couple of years ago geared for CFOs at a Tableau conference, and I thought he was great. He's likable, speaks with clarity, authority, and again, he talks our language. The first thing I had to say to John is your speaking abilities are phenomenal.
Well, I appreciate those kind words, Mark. I've had the chance to, so I do a lot of guest lectures at universities close by, mostly focused actually on data science. And so Tableau is what I would call kind of the data visualization side of things. It's definitely one of my my favorite tool.
How did you get started? What's the origin story for you in getting to where you are today?
Well, so I credit my mom. I won't go too far back, but I'll just say I was in undergrad, going to school full time and working full time. I was very fortunate to work for a successful startup company. It is called DigiCert. I was the 12th employee there. I didn't realize how fortunate I was until after I was done working there. At one point I woke up one morning and found myself like in charge of $14 million of sales annually. And I felt like I was way too young for that much responsibility. But I always enjoyed analyzing and trying to be strategic about how we could make our next moves at DigiCert, at the company I was working for, as well as for a lot of kind of small businesses that I was in contact with, either friends that owned a business or family members that had businesses. And I felt like there was a way to give them a data or a statistical advantage. So a lot of what I was interested in was more along the lines of machine learning. And then obviously kind of Tableau, and you could call it BI, business intelligence, dashboarding, those types of things.
When you work for the CPA firm, you start working with clients. And was there this aha moment that 90% of the clients I work with, this is their starting point. They are fumbling with data. That's one of your terms. They're data fumbling. Where did you begin to open your eyes? Or maybe always, maybe you didn't have to have your eyes opened.
Yeah, well, okay. So before I answer that, I just want to plug my current employer. So I work for a software company, Bamboo HR.
Yes.
And now working with them, helping them, you know, kind of a similar process that we'll talk about today. Starting with no data team really. And then all the way up to now we're starting to advocate for AI solutions and all those types of things. And fantastic employers. Well, I've been super fortunate to work with great people along the way. So I have to give those plugs because I don't feel like I'd be here without these wonderful opportunities that I've been granted.
And one of the biggest concerns I have, so I generally work with businesses $75 million and under. I have a couple that are over range. Even at $50 million, there are issues with just... There's this data everywhere and we don't know how to analyze it. Yes, we are using Excel, but it's very ad hoc. There's no standards in place. My big concern, and John, push back if you disagree, but it's like, let's go hire a Tableau expert or let's go hire a fill in the blank expert and that's going to solve our problems. Now, if you hire someone like at your firm or Interworks, they're not going to just come in and say, let's do some data viz. They're going to do what we're going to talk about here in the next few minutes. But do you agree that a lot of firms, they want the sizzle, they want the dashboard, but they don't want to know how to make the sausage. Is that correct?
I think that's fairly correct. And actually, at least in my experience, so I've done multiple consulting projects before I worked as a consultant, actually, on the side around data. And I, you know, small companies, super small companies, you know, talking about 1-2 person shops all the way up to, you know, been fortunate to work with some really great big companies. that is something that's really interesting, is they do start with like, let's go hire a Tableau expert, or let's go hire someone. And yeah, you're right. Like a company like an Interworks or like an iDaily, like, you know, some of these consulting companies that do this, they're going to, I'll say they'll put you on this path that we're going to talk about, where, you know, you kind of go from zero to 60, and we'll get you, you know, how do we repeatedly with consistency make the sausage, to use your term, make it the right way. But yeah, actually, I think that that's not necessarily the wrong place to start, right? So if you're a CFO and you've got a bunch of analysts and you're trying to get them hooked into the data and hooked up to the business, starting with the Viz tool and letting them connect directly to source systems is not necessarily a bad thing. You're going to get answers to your questions. You're going to get consistency. And the problem is it just doesn't scale as the company scales. And that's where, you know, data warehousing, data lakes, all those types of tools and technologies really come in to be a boon to help you lift those efforts from just a Viz tool, you know, on up. So yeah, that's probably what I would say.
Let's talk about some terminology very quickly. And I know I have complete trust in you that you're going to speak in a way that all of us can understand this. But data, you mentioned data lake. What is a data lake?
Yeah, great question. So a data, I mean, there's multiple definitions on this, but I would say like a data lake stores high volumes of raw data. So it's kind of like, you can think of it as like, it's going to capture all of your history. That's the purpose of a data lake, is it's going to capture all of your history. Usually, and nowadays, you know, so there's a very influential person in history called Ralph Kimball.
Yes.
Kind of like the data warehousing godfather, if you will.
Did he create what's called the STAR system?
STAR schema is the methodology for, it's a type of data warehousing. Now, a lot of what he recommends is very, very valuable and very, very solid. Great, solid principles. Highly recommend it. He solves the problem of how do you go from speed to value, right? He solves that problem very, very well. And that's where I think his terminology is very good. He was working in a day and age where they didn't have super, super cheap storage like we do nowadays.
Right.
And super, relatively less expensive compute. So we pay a lot less for those two things nowadays, which so like he talks about ETL, extract, transform, and load. And nowadays you could almost reverse the T and the L. So it's ELT, you're extracting and loading the data, then you transform it, you'll model it. And so a data lake is actually really taking advantage nowadays of the fact that storage is super cheap. And so you can take massive amounts of data, throw it inside of your data lake. And it's kind of a place where all of your data is sitting there. It's from all your different sources. It's raw. It's unchanged. It's real time. It's very granular. It's all the data that's not going to change. It's immutable. So it's kind of like that history, if you will. So very portable objects like data type files like CSV, ARVO files, ORC, Parquet files. Those are the types of files that are going to sit inside of a data lake, if you will. Common uses, auditing, data science folks are going to love that, sources for data modeling. So the data lake kind of feeds the data warehouse, if you will. So that's kind of the definition of what, there's lots of opinions. That's my definition of what I would call a data lake, if that makes sense.
Probably there are a lot of businesses you walk into for the first time ever. They do have a data lake. Maybe they didn't know. They didn't know that was the name of what they've created. So now let's talk about data warehousing. What's the difference between a data lake and a data warehouse?
Yeah. So the point is really like data lake versus data warehouse. Maybe it's not. You don't want to get stuck on that terminology necessarily. A lot of folks, you know, well, you'll see like a smaller shop or a decently sized company as they're starting to grow. You'll have like individual people who have like amalgamated these massive CSV files on a local or shared drive. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's definitely not a great thing for the long-term sustainability of a business, but it's something, right? It's better than nothing. And that's why I say it's not necessarily a bad thing. So a data warehouse is really a place where you're going to be storing modeled objects. And when I say modeled objects, I'm talking about using SQL or SQL to transform, that's that ELT, that you're actually transforming the data in a database, right? And usually it's a database that's optimized for columnar storage. So there's a difference between OLAP and OLTP. OLAP is the online, I think, analytical processing, and OLTP is the online transactional processing. So transactional processing is like your source system. Think of like a NetSuite or a Salesforce or a QuickBooks, or it's built for transactional speed, right? Entering and taking 100,000 orders per second. That's what a transactional system is designed to do. Analyzing, you know, and think about, you know, millions or billions or trillions of records. So lots and lots of rows in one column and trying to compute the average. That's what a columnar database is going to be really good at doing. And so that's a very technical, you know, distinction there, but it's one distinction between like a transactional system and a data warehouse system. Is that system is going to have OLAP. It's going to be focused on analytical processing. It's going to store those model objects generally in SQL. And it's going to usually, you know, if you have a data lake, it's going to source it from the data lake. If not, then you'll be pulling the data directly into a data warehouse. It's going to be focusing on, you know, accuracy, accessibility, accountability, organizational business processes. So Kimball preaches, you know, his whole system is designed, like I said, to do speed to value around a business process, right? Whatever that process might be, you know, sales process, a marketing process. It could be a customer experience process or an accounting or a financial process. So you're talking about CFOs, you know, what are all the different business problems? And a good CFO almost always has those things bucketed out candidly, in my experience, the folks that I've met at least. Really common use cases, Viz tools are going to hook up to your data warehouse. That's where you're going to hook up your tablet,
right,
your dashboards, your Power BIs. You're going to build KPIs off of them. Generally speaking, because you're hooking up a Viz tool like a Tableau to it, you're not going to have a lot of code required to connect to that system. You can then build your scorecards, dashboard, you know, data science folks can also hook up to it if it's necessary. But that's kind of where that one source of truth kind of gets built, is in that, I would say, the combo of the data lake, but really kind of that data warehouse, if you will. So hopefully that's a good distinction of data lake versus data warehouse. And that's, again, my, you know, John, opinion for me. So John, in his opinion.
Speaking of, so data lakes, data warehousing, talk to me a little bit about data governance and the so what, behind data governance.
Sure. So data governance, usually when I hear that term, I think of kind of like it's like a very sober term, right? Because people get really excited about the data and stuff. Data governance, to me, is really about you're starting to recognize there's a maturity happening around your data, right? So depending on the type of business that you're in, and I'm using the term business very broadly, you know, you could be a non-for-profit private school, but you actually might need to think very highly about your data governance. Right, you cannot allow your student records to get accessed by the public. You know, parents can access those types of records, but you don't want that being, you know, generally broadcasted. You know, there's this thing called, you know, PPI, personal private identifiable information. You don't want that data to get out there, right? You're talking about all sorts of compliance standards now, SOC 2, HIPAA, all those different types of things. You know, a healthcare organization, data governance usually is meant to guard the company from kind of like you can almost think of it like a legislative process where you're trying to say, like, we're not going to do this. We're okay doing these types of things. And here's how we're going to accomplish our business goals while using data to kind of make the best decisions. That's like a very general, you know, high level thing. The biggest tools that I would say that help you with data governance are things like a data dictionary. I would also argue that you want, I'm a huge visual learner. And I think it's very easy to create some diagrams to show, like, if you're an internal company, like, where your customer data is coming from. Where is that customer data coming from? What are the things in that customer data that you don't want exposed, and how are you going to safeguard it? And you have to think about some hard safeguards. How are you hashing data or just redacting data before it enters the data warehouse? How are you going to, you know, go through those policies and procedures as a company? Who's going to be allowed to access the data warehouse? Who's not? And then if there's some bad actors or some hackers that get access to that, hopefully you've built your data governance in such a way that it doesn't allow them to join certain data sets together to gain access to your customer's valuable data. Or again, like, you know, changing the setting. It could be a healthcare organization or a school, or, you know, all sorts of different organizations. You just don't want to expose that type of data out to the world, even though you as an organization have done a great job of collecting and people are trusting you with their data. That's a big deal nowadays.
This is the best explanation of data governance I've ever had. Have you ever encountered some business owners, CEOs, CTOs, where they take this either A, for granted, or B, this isn't that important? Now, if you're in the healthcare world, this is going to be a high priority. But you take a retailer, SaaS-based business, you know, some other business outside of healthcare, government, nonprofit, do they kind of think this isn't a huge priority? I hope it is.
I would say I don't think I've ever encountered someone that says, oh, data governance, we don't need to worry about it. But I've definitely encountered, you know, like a CEO or an executive who's like, maybe the attitude is more about getting the business results, right? Which is not bad. And you know, they'll delegate some of that governance to you as a consultant, or to, they might have someone who's like, that's their job, right? They're solely focused on that. One of the key exercises, in my opinion, that's really good to go through is mapping things out visually to show, you know, where the data coming from, who should be allowed to access it. And then it's very monotonous. And I would say, you know, it's very valuable too, to actually create a data dictionary. This can be in many different formats, but like just to use a crude example, you could even start with like something in Google Sheets or an Excel document. And, you know, you literally list out, here are all the columns in all these tables in my data warehouse. Here's what it means. Here's how it's transformed. Here's how it's defined. That way, as an analyst, if I'm, you know, inside of a tool like Tableau and I'm pulling in that data, I know exactly how it was transformed. What use case I should use it for. But from a data governance perspective, you know, you can go through and you can tag that data in certain ways and say, I don't want, you know, these people to have access to this, or, you know, or only certain folks should be able to join these two data sets together, that type of thing. In terms of, yeah, that's in my opinion, a very valuable tool for that. It literally gets everyone on the same page where you're kind of seeing that there are, you know, I use an example of like a Google Sheet or a spreadsheet. An Excel spreadsheet, and there are definitely tools that go on top of that, you know, and they're very advanced and they do great things. And I highly recommend those when it makes sense for the business. So in terms of though, like data governance and attitudes of different executives, I don't think I've ever met someone who's like, no, that's not
okay, good. Good.
But it's more along the lines of, well, we need to focus on the business results. And absolutely, that is a key critical thing. You know, I remember one case where I was doing a proof of concept for an organization that was a health organization, and I'm building a predictive model, and we purposely pulled out data related to certain demographics of individuals, because I didn't want to be at the end of that project saying, well, you know, 84-year-old, you know, Mrs. Brown, you know, our algorithm tells you that it's optimized to book her at the end of the day because she always takes 50 minutes, you know. I didn't want to be in that situation where we're suddenly, you know, recommending to a doctor's office that they book patients based on, you know, age or you know, any other protected class or something like that. So that's, yeah, and that's like an example of where, you know, putting that mindset on of data governance can really save you a lot of, you know, potential heartache or things like that. So,
John, I just have a few more questions. Can we talk about application? We've talked about data. We talked about data lakes, data warehousing, data governance. Now, where do we put all of this data? And a lot of the smaller organizations, they're probably going to be using Google Sheets, spreadsheets, Access databases. But let's talk about some of the cloud storage that's available that's actually not that expensive, right? Can you talk about some that we should be aware of?
Yeah, so there's certain types of cloud storage, like Amazon will offer S3 buckets, and it's a blob storage. That's one type of an example. Azure and Google Cloud, those are kind of the three big cloud companies. They all offer a similar cloud. I think Google I can't remember the name of that one. But yeah, Azure Blob Storage, AWS S3 Buckets, and Google Cloud. I think it is called Blob Storage.
I thought you were going to mention maybe Snowflake as well.
Oh yeah, so that would be like those that I just mentioned, those S3 Buckets, that would be like a great place for your data lake, depending on the size
of
your, a data warehouse, absolutely. A tool like Snowflake or Amazon Redshift or their RDS instances. You know, Google has their BigQuery tools. Azure has the Microsoft SQL Server. those are, yeah, in the cloud, fantastic tools. Those are going to require someone to know SQL, and they're going to be transforming that data and storing that data in the cloud. Those are the three that I would definitely go with.
What about the first tools you mentioned for data lakes? Is this not a do-it-yourself project? Do we need a firm like yours or someone in-house that's an IT person?
Yeah, so for the first tools, you can just dump the data in there, and you can pretty much do it in a GUI fashion or with very little scripting. So, you know, with a little bit of Googling around, you might be able to figure out how to put stuff into an Amazon S3 bucket. Putting it in there is one thing, you know, making sure it's secure and safe is another. You know, and then on the other side, where you're talking about like a Snowflake or a BigQuery or a Microsoft SQL Server, you're going to need someone who knows SQL. And you're going to want someone who knows how to store and manipulate the data, transform it in a way that matches your business processes. So that would be like the Kimball approach, for example. But yeah, those are three fantastic technologies. And that's where you would want to reach out to kind of someone who knows what they're doing, like a data warehousing professional. Or something along those lines.
Full stack analytics. Now, again, this goes back to your old CPA firm. That's the term they use. Is that a general term that everyone should know? Full stack analytics?
I don't know how many people are using that term. I actually think I was probably one of the few within the consulting firm.
I'm familiar with the term. What's your tech stack? And that's contextual. But I'd never heard the term full stack analytics.
To me, and what I would tell folks when I was consulting, and I still do today, is, you know, full stack analytics or full stack data strategy, it really is referencing, like, you know, in the software world, you'll have what they call a full stack developer, someone who can work on a software application on the front end all the way through to the back end, you know, where a database sits, all the logic in between, and like a front end. That's what they, you know, a full stack software developer. A full stack data scientist or a full stack data analytics professional is someone who can take you from strategy, in my opinion, someone who can take you from strategy through data warehousing, all the way from what I would call no I or no intelligence to BI, business intelligence, and then from BI to AI. And that, you know, what I just outlined there is kind of those three steps, no I, BI, AI. That would be what I would call for a traditional small business, you know, company. There's definitely companies where their whole product is just an AI product. And so that may not be applicable. They are an AI company, but they're still going to, you know, start with business intelligence. They're still going to have to go through that process of understanding their business intelligence, amalgamating that data into a data warehouse, building business intelligence dashboards, visualizations. And then kind of, you know, depending on the company, you're going to want to answer some pretty basic questions. And I would argue, you probably want to do that with a statistical advantage, like a predictive or machine learning model. Who of my customers are likely to churn? Which of my leads in my sales funnel is most likely to turn into a client? And where do I prioritize those? All sorts of different applications. Those are two very popular ones I see amongst businesses nowadays. But full stack analytics is kind of referencing that whole idea of, well, what's your data strategy? And then it's data warehousing, BI, and AI. That's a John Daniels term that I tried to popularize. And I think, I don't know, to some degree, you could go ask my folks at iDaily how much they still use that.
What's a success story that you look back at? Maybe you can at least share the industry. What was a success story where they had the no intelligence, to where it then turned into, oh, we got this great business intelligence. Now they're getting into artificial intelligence and maybe even to predictive intelligence. Is there, and again, that maybe not be a fair question, because I like to let people know what the questions will be in advance, but I'm trying to talk slowly so you can think of a good answer. But is there a success story that comes to mind, John?
One very unique and interesting project that I was a part of was an art museum project where this was actually out of graduate school. We had seven different art museums and across North America and Canada, where they were trying to predict what was, you know, how many customers are going to show up at an art museum exhibit. And I remember there was a moment, so we had done it from a predictive or machine learning approach. And this is where I would say it's not necessarily bad that they didn't spend time building a data warehouse, right? They wanted to go straight to an AI solution. But what was really cool about that and kind of hearing the iterations after I was done with this project and the next set of folks kind of took the second version on, was there was this moment where I remember it was marketing dollars spent on the y-axis and the number of folks that came to the museum exhibit on the x-axis. And for me, I had no context for art museums. I would say that, you know, I couldn't even, before the project, I couldn't have even told you what type of art I preferred before. First of all, I'm colorblind, red-green colorblind. And second of all, I didn't appreciate the arts like I did. But going through that project, meeting with all these art directors, meeting with all these folks, like, it really gave me appreciation for the arts. And it gave me an appreciation for the type of business problems these nonprofit organizations have to face up to. But I remember there was this chart, and we ended up this chart with, on the y-axis, marketing dollars, on the x-axis, you know, it was the number of folks that attended. And there was this log linear relationship, which, put it in business terms, is just a way to say there was a point of diminishing returns, right? Where your curve kind of went up and spiked, and then it flattened out over time. So like for the first half of the curve, it was like, you might be able to come up with a business rule that's like, for every $10,000 of marketing we spent, we saw 1,000 people come to this art museum exhibit, right? But then there was a point, and I don't remember the number, but there, you know, $50,000, $70,000, something like that. Let's say that that was the number, right? $50,000 to make the numbers easy. After that point, it was almost like every $10,000 of marketing you spent, you're only getting 100 people to come through the door. And so it was great, because that was like, I would call that like a one-off analysis using machine learning to try to understand what's the relationship between these two variables. Because this is a key understanding for our operational model for this folks. And then hearing how they, you know, the next project, I have to go double check, they took it from marketing dollars generally to different types of marketing, right? Digital versus, you know, traditional marketing, print marketing or billboards or things like that. And splitting out even possibly different digital channels of marketing. Because that's like a big deal for these art museums when they're going to get advertising and partner with like a local business or something like that. The business wants to know, well, how many eyeballs are going to see my name next to this great art museum that everybody loves? You know, that sort of a thing. That's one example. Another example is there's a tech company that before I kind of entered the project where they had some analysts that were reporting to the CFO, and they were working directly with, connecting directly to the source systems. Which is exactly what I would actually say that you should do. You know, you're going to get the quickest time to value. As the company started growing and as the needs of the project started growing, it became evident that a data warehouse was necessary. And so, you know, that's actually right around the time when I entered and recommended all sorts of tools and different projects and processes to help us get there. And I would say that that has been a big success and is continuing to move from that no I to BI, and now from the BI into the AI space, where they're, you know, looking at doing this on a larger scale for a larger organization, you know, hundreds of millions in revenue, you know, that type of thing. That's type of the scale of a project where you're going to start systematizing these things and taking advantage of that at scale value is kind of what I would say. So the name of that one, not going to say, but definitely some major success stories. And I don't know. I guess I would say, you know, don't be, there's that quote, what does it say? Don't despise humble beginnings. Like, you know, don't think that, you know, there's not like a magic bullet per se, is kind of my opinion, but you starting somewhere is better than starting nowhere. And once you get to a point where you're kind of running into some problems, that's when you know it's probably time to call somebody or hire somebody to help you with those sort of data warehousing problems, if that makes sense.
I was thinking about your no I to BI to EI. AI sequence. And it got me to thinking about what's more important. And this is a little bit of a trick question. What's more important, a data scientist or an expert in visual analytics?
It's funny because I feel like younger in my career, I would have said data scientist hands down, right? And now that I've, I would say, matured a little bit, I think I would say it depends. It depends on where you are as a business. And so, you know, depending on where you are and the types of questions you're trying to answer is going to change who you're looking for in that situation, right? So one example of that, you might be like a small to medium-sized business, and you might want to predict, you know, who or what type of product, what type of product, let's just use this as an example, like a retail business. What type of product should I pick up that's going to bring more customers through my door? Let's pretend that you and I own this business. Let's call it an ice cream shop. What flavor of ice cream should we hook up, Mark? You know, and we're both kind of arguing about it. It's like, well, in my opinion, there's two ways you could go about answering that question using your dichotomy of a great data viz person, of data vizzer, and a data scientist, right? You could hire a data scientist who would go out and predict, build an algorithm that would help you predict, you know, what product you should pick up next. That could be a great approach. You could also hire someone who's a great data visualization expert who would help you look through history to identify what were the top sellers and those types of things. Both might get you to a really good place, right? In that example, maybe I would argue like, well, a data scientist could get you maybe a little bit further if they're good and if they know what types of questions to answer. And they'll be able to kind of look at feature importance, which is kind of a machine learning term that basically helps you pick the top five columns of data or the top five features that a predictive model produces and help you marry that up with kind of the top five things you can do as a business. And the intersection of those things is where the power happens, right? Like there's a company that I consulted once that they were very much convinced that the weather was indicative of their success. And because they were a hotel industry, and in its depending on the weather, depended on how many people would book their hotel, right? So the number, they were very interested in predicting the number of heads in beds is what they would call it. So they call it the heads in beds algorithm, right? What's interesting about that is, well, the weather is not necessarily something you can control, right? But what are the things you can control? And that's where I say, well, let's run it through an algorithm that can evaluate hundreds of columns of data, hundreds of features simultaneously. And then let's identify what are some key business processes that we can actually kind of, I'll call it, pull the levers on to identify where does that intersection take place. Because maybe you can not control the weather, but you might be able to control the messaging in a marketing campaign or which websites you market on based on, you know, weather patterns and things like that. So that you can be give yourself a statistical advantage to kind of proactively identify what those optimal scenarios might be, and then make those decisions, you know, in rapid succession using like a predictive model that's been trained properly. But again, contrary to, you know, I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth here. A data visualization expert might be able to help you get to that same answers, and they might be able to help you do it quicker or with less data. You know, it depends. It just kind of depends.
The reason I asked the question is for other listeners to realize sometimes we need that math person too. I know, I think your answer is very fair and very complete, very balanced. So I guess it wasn't a trick question, but it's like, don't forget the data scientist. It's an important role. Hey, I could talk to you all day, but we need to wrap up. This has been great, by the way. What projects are you working on right now with your current firm? Anything exciting?
Yeah, so a couple of things I probably shouldn't mention.
Understood.
That are, I think, really, really exciting. So we're an HR software company. And we take very seriously, you talk about data governance, we take the data governance side very seriously. We're very excited about some of the products or features that we're going to put into our product that we hope really helps us accomplish our mission, which is to set people free to do great work. That's what the HR company is focused on. A couple of things that I feel like, you know, shouldn't be any surprise to anyone that we are working on is, you know, some type, you know, customer churn model. And you know, very soon, I could see in the next, you know, few months here working on that, as well as working on some models that will help us predict, you know, which leads we should chase down, which ones are higher, showing a higher probability of success, you know, turning into clients and things like that. I also do some work for, you know, pro bono, some work for some nonprofits, where I'm just helping them kind of on the other side, where I'm just helping them get data together in a very easy to understand, easy to use way. Because these people that work at this nonprofit, you know, it's a special needs school at very limited resources, you know, and they're awesome, the work that they're doing for folks. And similar, you know, their mission is to make the lives of the students and the lives of their students' families just so much better. And I saw a couple of opportunities where we're trying to automate a few of the data entry processes. And then on top of that, trying to automate some of the data reporting that they have to do lots of data reporting. I didn't know this before, but there's tons and tons of data reporting around special needs schools. It's a burden for those kind of folks. And so helping them kind of get that data off to all the different specialists, you know, parents have specialists that they're working with, as well as the school has different specialists and different requirements that they have to fill out for the district or the state that they're in. I found that process and project to be really, really fascinating. So there's a lot of work kind of, again, going from different ranges of the spectrum where, you know, and there actually might be a couple of machine learning things we do for this non-for-profit pretty soon here that you might consider on that AI side of things, right? As well as, you know, there's a couple of things we're doing already on the BI side, you know, helping them build dashboards to see on a daily basis how students are performing on certain behaviors, certain, you know, academic scores and things like that, you know, aggregating that across time. Things that are, you would kind of think are basic and intuitive, but, you know, and they are, it's just helping automate those systems and bring that data into one place so that they can see it and use it to make great, better decisions for the students is, you know, it's a huge deal. So anyway, that's my answer to that, Mark.
any person internally that wants to be that data champion, and maybe they don't have your skill set, what's the best way for them to get learning, start getting more educated with everything we've been talking about?
Sure. I mean, first of all, I'll put it out there. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. You can reach out to me. I'm happy to give. And I genuinely enjoy helping folks. You know, I don't know everything. So like I'll point you towards individuals or folks that I feel like might be better. General resources, I would say, depending on what you're trying to do, like if you're trying to build a data warehouse, if you're trying to, you know, and depending on, you know, if you're a CFO or you're an accountant or if you're, you know, a non-technical person, you know, and I consider CFOs technical in their own respect, right? Or a CPA, you know, technical in their own respect, but they may not consider themselves technical from like, you know, I don't know, coding, I don't know, SQL or data, you know, that type of thing. If you're curious, you're not sure who to reach out to, you know, get a couple of folks in the room with you. And I would say you're going to want to find someone who, in my opinion, they kind of have the heart of a teacher. They're not necessarily focused on selling you so much as helping you accomplish what your goals are. Someone who's good at listening. That's the kind of person that I'd want to do business with, where they're really trying to create a win-win. And also, generally speaking, if they're trying to teach more, they're usually better at their job anyway, at least in my experience. And, you know, so that's one piece of advice. Great resources. So data warehousing, if you're trying to, you know, freshen up skills or learn more about that, you want to learn it at the ground roots level. The book you mentioned, highly recommend it.
That book is over 20 years old. Isn't that amazing?
It is. And there's also a website. I think you can just Google. I don't know the name of it exactly, but you just Google like Ralph Kimball Data Warehousing. And like he has a list of principles on the site. You click on a link and it's like short paragraphs. They're like five sentence paragraphs for data warehousing. For visualization, yeah, I would plug Tableau, actually. They have a free version of their product. I would plug them for sure. And you can grab, they have free training resources and they have a free way to pull and publish data. They call it Tableau Public. And like, so one project I would recommend every person that they should do is, you know, grab that tool, Tableau, and then publish your resume online inside of Tableau. And it's a great exercise because you know the data because it's all about you. And two, you know, you can do a couple YouTube searches to have people walk you through how they've done it. And they'll walk you, it'll help you start thinking in the mindset of data sets and how you, you know, should join certain sets of data, how you have to prepare data in a certain way. Just going through that process is going to help you appreciate what a data engineer or someone building data warehouse is going to have to go through. So if you're interested in kind of data visualization, I definitely plug that route. Data science, machine learning. This is actually one where it, you know, similar to like a data engineer kind of doing data warehousing, you do need to know some coding skills. But if you've been coding for a little bit, you know, 6 months to a year, so if you haven't been coding for 6 months to a year, there's a couple of books I'd recommend. One is Python for Everyone. It's a free book by, I think his name is Chuck Schumer. He's a University of Michigan professor. He has a free website associated with it. The Amazon, you know, hard copy is like $10. Love that book. Picked that one up years ago. Fantastic. Another one is Automate the Boring Stuff. I think it's Al Schweitzer is his name. That's another one if you're just trying to learn how to program. And that one's fun because it'll go through a lot of examples. And he has code in there and some fun commentary on like how you can literally automate boring things in an office space. And who knows, you might actually produce some value for your company by doing some of that stuff. So those are Python specific. I recommend Python. It's the easiest language to learn right now because of that. I don't have a great recommendation. I need to get a good recommendation for learning SQL. That's like a basic basic tutorial.
I would almost say go to a class.
Yeah, you can go to a class. There is a website you can go to. I'd recommend it's W3 Schools. It's free. And I like free or inexpensive ways to learn. But going to a class like you recommended, Mark, or getting a group of folks together is a huge benefit, huge resource. I remember when I felt like I was non-technical moving into a technical space. It was really beneficial to have other folks to talk to, bounce ideas off of, compare, you know, errors in your code and things like that, if you're interested. One other thing, too, is I would not discredit, you know, there's a lot of financial folks, CFOs, CPAs, who are really good at Excel. And a lot of my friends in the data science community would maybe gawk at me for saying this, but Excel is actually like the world's largest functional programming language. There's over 750 million users worldwide. And I think Python, I can't remember, you know, the exact statistics, but it's not even close to that. And so like, if you really understand a concept, it doesn't matter what language you're implementing it in. Now, Python definitely is there, and, you know, it's, and other programming languages are there, and they're going to scale a lot better than running your whole business off of Google spreadsheets or Excel. So I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, like, for understanding and learning concepts, don't discredit what you can do inside of Google Sheets or Excel. There's a ton of learning and value that can definitely happen there.
Well, last question. This is CFO Bookshelf. We have to ask you, you've just gone through a bunch of books, and I've been taking notes here. Other books that you love that you just did not mention, or did we already hit some of your favorite books?
Okay, so I'm a religious person. So my favorite book is, hands down, the Book of Mormon. I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It has changed my life the more I read it over and over. So I definitely recommend that to everyone and anyone, regardless of your background. There's me being a little bit evangelical about my faith. But on like a business side, Dale Carnegie's book about public speaking, I love that book. That was a lot of fun. And one of the principles he teaches there was just so down to earth. I loved it. He said, if you want to get better at public speaking, speak in public and just get up and start speaking. And, you know, practice was kind of his thing. And, you know, I feel like helped me gain a lot of confidence in my career and things like that. Another one around business would, you know, also by Dale Carnegie, is How to Win Friends and Influence People. That's kind of a typical one. One that I have really, really appreciated recently is called The Atomic Habit, I think.
Yeah, that's great.
James Clear is the author of that. The whole principle behind that book is fantastic. The story he shares about his own personal life is awesome. And just this idea that you can build systems of habits that kind of help you perpetuate your life and get 1% better every day. You know, he makes that analogy between, what's the investing term? Compound interest and habit building is just fantastic. I love that book. That was a big one. One that I'm listening to. I do a lot of audiobooks. Most of the time I'm listening while I'm running or jogging or transporting, driving in the car or something like that. So I'm listening to a book right now called The Lean Startup.
That's outstanding.
Yeah. Really like Eric Ries, really like that book. There was another one I listened to previously that I will plug, which was, I think it's called Rework. It's the folks who built
37 Signals, those guys.
Yeah, really like those two books in my mind hit a really key principle, which is, you know, start with less than you think you need. You know, you think you might need to go raise millions of dollars of capital. It's like, no, you just, you know, start as a side hustle first. And they're proof that you can do those things with, you know, and they're making tens of millions of dollars every month, I think.
This has been great. I'm so thankful that you said yes on LinkedIn a couple of months ago. We can do this again if we can make it work out with our schedules.
For sure. Yeah, I'd love to. It'd be great. It's been fun to speak with you, and hopefully the audience finds it useful too.
You are listening to CFO Bookshelf, lifelong learning for financial leaders. And now back to our host, Mark Gandy.
Again, John Daniels, thank you very much. AI Solutions Advocate at Bamboo HR. He's a data science and analytics expert who speaks our language. I have his LinkedIn URL in the show notes over at cfobookshelf.com. Next week, I cannot wait to release the interview with David Farber. We spoke a few days ago. He's the biographer of John Jacob Raskob, the first modern era CFO. Everybody Ought to Be Rich. That's the book. Great book. Loved it. Read it a couple of years ago. Again, cannot wait to have David on next week. Hey, this is Mark Gandy. This is CFO Bookshelf. Until next time.